Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, December 5th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. With an eye on supporting education, waterfront activity, and tourism, Council unanimously voted at their last meeting on Tuesday to explore options to waive or discount dockage fees at city-operated marinas and ports, specifically for vessels that contribute to community and tourism events or that offer free educational or public programming. The motion brought forward by Councillor Don Amos specifically references the tall ship St. Lawrence II, based out of Portsmouth Olympic Harbor. The ship, which calls Kingston's waterfront home, offers hands-on experiential education programs. Chris Chafe, Executive Director of Tallship Expeditions Canada Brigantine, came before Council to speak on behalf of the program and its impact.
Over the years, our community has grown increasingly distant from the water as a result of ever-compounding barriers to access. Even low-barrier avenues have become prohibitively expensive and are often viewed as not for them by some economically disadvantaged and racialized Kingstonians. Half the youth we serve have never been on the water. This is a trend we want to see reversed by breaking down those barriers and enabling access for underserved members of our community. The lake isn't just a pretty backdrop. It isn't just a racetrack for wealthy sailors, nor is it a fishing pond for the well-to-do. The lake is the biggest public space we have and should be available to everyone. We've made an offer to staff to operate a barrier-free sailing and water access program to the community, as well as to open a boater and education space available to boaters and visitors at POH and the community more broadly in the past OLS location. The city recently made a sizable investment in that space to support the sleeping cabin project, which has now been sitting vacant for 2 years. We are offering the opportunity to breathe new life into a space by opening it to the public. It's been difficult for us to understand the city's position on mooring fees. All the ports we visit, Thunder Bay, St. John's, New York City, Halifax, Yananaque, and over a month in Lunenburg, all of these spaces were provided free of charge, and they were very happy to have us there, right, to open up the boat, to have youth engage with the ship. The only exception seems to be Kingston.
City staff are already in the process of reviewing Portsmouth Olympic Harbor as part of a broader visioning process. That work is focused on aligning site uses with Kingston's waterfront, supporting sailing, water sports, community access, and other opportunities. In bringing the motion forward, Councillor Amos pointed to the role tall ships and other specialty vessels play in strengthening Kingston's tourism profile, supporting waterfront activity, and fostering community pride. He also noted that other Canadian ports and marinas, such as Halifax and St. John's, already have programs in place that waive or reduce docking fees for educational and charitable vessels in recognition of their public value.
If you think of the 1800s, our waterfront was plastered with these type of ships, and now we don't have that. We don't have this type of ship that's coming into our ports very often, and this is a tourism opportunity for us. This is an opportunity for people to come out onto the dock, jump on the boat, see what a tall ship is about, and it's done for free. So it's something that our downtown tourism can sink their teeth into. It's something that if you're new to Kingston, if you're new to the country, and you're not familiar with the tall ships, you can see one that's actually working. And then any youth who has any sort of curiosity about our water and wants to see what a tall ship is about, what a great opportunity to come down with your family and have a tour of the boat and see what it's about. This, as we heard from our delegation today, that boat travels all over Eastern Ontario, well, all over Ontario, really. Lake Ontario, and then through the Atlantic Ocean from New York City to Halifax and everywhere along the eastern seaboard. This is an opportunity for us to really lean into our tall ship experience here in Kingston. This is its home dock. This is an opportunity for us to really bring something forward where the public can enjoy it, and Kingston can take pride in it. You heard the captain speak. He is now going to be going through Tourism Kingston, and it'll be representing us at other ports. We need to embrace at our end its home port and what we can do for it. We are a city that says we thrive on history and innovation. History is here, and we have an opportunity to support it and let it thrive.
With council support, city staff are set to report back to council in the second quarter of 2026, with options for implementing fee waivers or cost reductions at city-operated marinas, along with an analysis of the financial costs and benefits to the city. At their last meeting on Tuesday, council voted to move forward with an expansion of support for heritage property owners, addressing an issue that's been growing across Kingston and the province. Changes made in 2023 to the Ontario Heritage Act shifted municipalities away from using listing as a long-term tool to protect heritage properties. As a result, many municipalities moved to formally designate previously listed properties before protections were lost. This has led to a sharp increase in heritage designations over the past 2 years. At the same time, the insurance industry has entered what's known as a hard market, with rising premiums linked to increasing environmental disasters. In this climate, some heritage property owners have reported difficulty securing insurance or facing higher premiums. While the province maintains that heritage designation alone should not affect insurance, in Kingston, a growing number of property owners have raised concerns about affordability and access to insurance. In some cases, this has resulted in council opting not to designate a property or, in one case, repealing an existing designation. These concerns led to a motion in August 2025 when council called on the province and insurance companies to explain why some heritage-designated properties were facing higher premiums or denied coverage altogether. When the report on the issue returned to council on Tuesday, Councillor Brandon Tozzo asked for an update on the city's outreach efforts.
Insurance costs have been such a challenge, I know, for some of our heritage properties. Have we had any movement from the province on this, of dealing with this? Because the report doesn't really speak to any discussions from the province on their end of doing anything about the insurance industry.
We haven't received any further information from the province related to this. There has been a little bit of movement from the National Trust of Canada, which has set up a new support program for heritage properties as it relates to insurance.
That update came alongside a new set of recommendations from staff focused on expanding financial support for heritage property owners. The report recommended doubling the budget for the Heritage Property Grant Program to $200,000 per year, starting in 2026, and developing a new zero-interest loan program to help cover larger and more costly conservation and restoration projects. In addition, the report recommends exploring options for improving heritage protections, especially in rural Kingston. With unanimous support from council, staff are set to act on these recommendations and report back in late 2026. Councillor Connie Glenn spoke to the challenges the insurance issue has created and expressed hope that expanded financial support will help ease the pressure for heritage property owners.
This has been a very difficult time and a very difficult topic to manage. And I think that what you're proposing is thoughtful. I think it's helpful and it supports what we value so much here in Kingston. So no questions for you. I'm well aware of all the issues that we're trying to navigate, but I appreciate the approach and the care that's been taken.
While uncertainty remains without clear action from the province, the city is moving forward with local solutions. With the growing need for affordable and supportive housing in Kingston, the city is taking steps towards new ways to help fund future projects. Back in April 2025, council directed staff to explore the feasibility of using community bonds as a funding tool for municipal initiatives. At their meeting on December 2nd, staff returned to council with a report and recommendations on how Kingston could begin moving in that direction. Community bonds are typically issued by nonprofits or charities, allowing residents and organizations to invest directly in local projects while earning a modest financial return. In addition to the financial benefit, they offer a social return by keeping investment dollars working within the community. Staff noted that this model has already been used successfully in several Ontario communities, including Toronto, Halliburton, Hamilton, and Ottawa.
One of the interesting ones was in Halliburton. They raised $850,000 in less than 9 weeks. So it was a really an efficient process with respect to that. Indwell Hopes and Homes, which I think is listed in the report, they just launched a $15 million project for a new rental building with 160 units in it. And I actually was just looking yesterday at an initiative that's been announced in Gray County. And it's actually, they're looking at the potential for community bonds, and it's actually through their Community Development Corporation, Community Investment Corporation that they have there. So, which is also a new one. And that's the first one that actually has been linked to a municipality.
With unanimous support from council, the city will now work with Tapestry Community Capital, a nonprofit consultancy that specializes in community bond financing, to assess whether this model could work for affordable housing in Kingston. That process will include consultations with potential investors and community organizations, as well as a community readiness assessment in the coming months. Councillor Connie Glenn spoke to the potential impact of this new approach.
I think we have an opportunity here again to get some more affordable housing into our community. And I'm looking forward to the report coming back from Tapestry, provided everyone supports us moving ahead, to see what our community can do. This gives the opportunity for everyone in Kingston who is concerned about this issue to contribute. So it's not just for big investors. This is for all of us who maybe have a few dollars to put in, who want to see our community flourish. The amount of community building that's coming out of this, one of the things that was noted at the meeting was that oftentimes once the bond matures, people simply turn around and reinvest it in another project. And it's something to be able to walk past a project that's been built and say, I helped to do that. So I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed that we can see something really positive come out of this community that will help to, you know, get us further along in the process of providing homes and creating a stronger community.
The staff report also highlights the urgency behind the move. In 2023, Kingston's median household income rose by about 5%, while rental prices jumped between 10 and 14% across 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom units, continuing a trend seen both locally and across the country. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today, featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Friday, December 5th, daytime high of -5 with a 60% chance of snow throughout the day, going to feel like -11 with the wind chill. Saturday, December 6th, daytime high of -2, overnight low of -10 with periods of snow throughout the day. Sunday, December 7th, daytime high of -3, feeling closer to zero, so a little warmer than the days before it. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, December 8th, a mix of sleet and freezing rain on the morning of December 8th, high of -4, low of -7. So it's going to be chilly and there is going to be precipitation. Might be worthwhile doing a school bus watch. Keep your eye on the tri board for any announcements of bus cancellations. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, winter parking restrictions are in effect as of December 1st. During December and March, overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it. During January and February, however, overnight on-street parking will not be permitted, no matter the weather conditions. So once again, these restrictions go in effect December 1st and will last until April 1st. Here are some relevant road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, 5 Centennial 2 Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road San Beda Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news.
This year's Kingston General Hospital Auxiliary's Teddy Bear Campaign has officially kicked off. Since the annual campaign launched in 2004, it has raised more than $500,000, providing funds for new equipment for the pediatric program at Kingston Health Sciences Center. Last year, more than 300 teddy bears were delivered to young patients, and community donations brought the hospital past the midway point of its two-year, $55,000 goal for a point-of-care ultrasound machine. This year's campaign runs until December 23rd, with the goal of crossing the finish line on that two-year commitment. Chelsea Reynolds, president of the KGH Auxiliary, sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign.
Well, to start us off, so great to have you back. For folks who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could give us a refresher on what the KGH Teddy Bear Campaign is all about.
So the Teddy Bear Campaign is something that we've been running. This is our 22nd year, and it's a fundraiser that we do, the auxiliary runs, to raise funds for pediatric care in our KGH site. The bears are available for sponsorship. It costs $100, and all the funds raised goes for equipment for pediatric units.
Mm-hmm. And this year is the second year fundraising for a point-of-care ultrasound machine in the pediatric unit. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that goal, where we're at, how far we have to go.
Yeah, so the last year we made a two-year commitment, and the cost was $55,000. Last year we raised $28,000, so we just need to get basically the same amount again. And then the ultrasound machine stays on the pediatric units, which makes it easier for the families and the patients in particular, because they don't have to go somewhere. They don't have to be wheeled downstairs. They don't have to go where they're not as comfortable, they're not as familiar, and the families can stay right with them. And for the staff, it's right there on the floor. Hopefully they can get results a little bit quicker. Everyone's just a little more at ease.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned last time we chatted, you know, that second year, sometimes it's a little harder to get that push.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak to that, give some words of inspiration for the community.
Yeah. So last year when we first started talking about it, it's new and it's exciting and, oh, we have this big goal. Now this year it sort of feels like, okay, well, now we're trying to finish that off. But it's, you know, it's a great goal to think about that being in the hospital and available for use for our staff and for the benefit of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this, again, awesome piece of equipment, but I was wondering if you'd also speak to that immediate impact of, you know, being able to deliver the bears at Christmas time and that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, so the bears will get delivered, I think it's December 19th, 20th sort of thing. And so that's to any young people who are in the hospital at KGH, at Hotel Dew. We also partner with a hospital and Moose Factory, Winnebago. And so bears are delivered there. And I was actually just approached last week. I was out for a walk and a dad and two daughters came up to me. And 3 years ago, one of the daughters had been in having surgery close to Christmas and she had received a bear. And they recognized me and said, "Are you the teddy bear lady?" And they still remembered that and it had made such an impact on them. And she's doing well, which was lovely. So to hear that 3 years on, and she said, "Thanks again for the bear." It was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people are really making that immediate impact right in our community.
Yes, right? Because, I mean, nobody wants to be in the hospital ever. Nobody wants to be in the hospital at Christmas time, and especially if you're a small person. So to get that bear is just, you know, a little bit of something extra.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who are returning donors or first-time donors, how can they get involved?
The easiest way to donate is through Canada Helps. If you just look up KGH Auxiliary and then the Teddy Bear Campaign through there, that's you can direct your funds directly to that. You can also go on the KHSC website and make your way to our page. We have a form. You can fill that out. But Canada Helps is probably the easiest for people this way.
The 2025 Bears will be available for sponsorship until December 23rd and can be purchased by calling 613-549-6666, extension 6352, completing the donation brochure, or by visiting Canada Helps and selecting Teddy Bear Campaign 2025 in the donation details section.
Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Tonight, catch a Miss Emily Christmas at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 7:30 p.m. This is an all-ages event. Moving into the weekend, tomorrow on Saturday at the Grad Club, it's Holiday Spice Drag Fundraiser, bringing a sparkle for a great cause. Also on Saturday, it's the Holiday Sociable with East Coast Experience at the Cove Inn starting at 7 p.m. The Kingston Choral Society has their Christmas party at the Spire gathering at 7 p.m. and it's karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 9 p.m. On Sunday, it's become an annual community highlight. It's Clem's 9th annual Country Christmas Warm Clothing Roundup at the RCHA. This event runs from 1 to 5 p.m. and supports neighbors, local artists, and of course, the holiday spirit. Stars on Ice comes to Slush Puppy Place starting at 4 p.m. And as always, the best way to wrap up this week is with karaoke at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. As for concerts this weekend, lots going on Friday, December 5th at the Broom Factory, it's Zoo Station, bringing a full U2 Zoo TV experience starting at 8 p.m. At the Grand Theater, it's a Bublé Christmas with vocalist Jay Davis starting at 7:30 p.m. At Hotel Wolf Island, a must-see is the Oscar Evans Group playing at 6:30, mixing jazz, soul, and modern groove. And at the Coven, it's the Holiday Primer with the Plaid Bastards featuring Jeff Kaleri, Wade Foster, and Sean McGallo, starting at 6 p.m. Moving into the weekend, the vibes do not stop there. On Saturday, it's Tommy Youngstein at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. Known for covers of Springsteen, Fleetwood Mac, and other classic rock, it's always a great turnout. At the Kingston Grand Theater, Danu brings world-class Irish traditional music to Kingston, and it's perfect for the holiday season. And at Tiernanog, it's the Celtic Kitchen Party at 9 p.m. Finally, closing out the week on Sunday, it's Jonathan Jones at Timeout Bar from 3 to 5 p.m. Candlelight, the best of Hans Zimmer at the Spire starting at 6:30 p.m. Candlelight, Coldplay, and Imagine Dragons String Quartet at the Spire starting at 8:30 p.m. And a candlelit carol service at St. James Anglican Church at 4:30 p.m. Also on Sunday, there will be a youth open mic at the Sesame Theater, starting at 5 p.m. That wraps up your Friday forecast. If you have an event or concert that you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendars, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go or hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.